This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. And by A.G. Edwards, caring for nest eggs for more than 120 years with a commitment to provide objective financial advice. Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
There are days when the news isn't really about the news. It's about how people feel about the news. It happens with politics and social issues, and it happens a lot with economics. Take today's unemployment report, 94,000 new jobs. Not bad, but still. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Reuters, the world's news and information source, working to make a difference every day. Before it's news, it's Reuters. And by U.S. Trust, Bank of America Private Wealth Management, committed to understanding the values that truly matter to clients and offering a personal approach to managing their wealth.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. Great to have you with us on this Friday. It is December the 7th today. And there was a certain beauty to today's unemployment report. The economy added almost 100,000 new jobs last month, right in that sweet spot that you could interpret just about any way you wanted. Good, bad, or none of the above. Marketplace's Steve Tripoli starts us off.
Everyone's waiting for some news that will stop the collective nail-biting about a recession. Don't shoot the messengers, but today's figures don't do it for the Conference Board's Ken Goldstein. He says once resilient U.S. consumers were already down in the economy before today's so-so report.
When we look at consumer expectations for August, for September, for October, it's crystal clear that that resiliency has wilted.
Households are braced for bad news, tightening spending, and today won't change a thing. Goldstein says businesses aren't far behind.
Executives are not in any better shape and probably also making the decision in terms of investing and starting now in terms of hiring. If they don't need to right now, they're not going to.
Over at Youngstown State University in Ohio, labor expert John Russo was equally unimpressed by 94,000 new jobs.
You really have to be generating around 150,000 jobs every month to make up for the amount of people that are coming into the workforce.
Other economists were reassured. They see today's number supporting at least the notion that we won't slide into a deep recession. Ken Goldstein has a curt characterization for that thinking.
Grasping at straws.
And Youngstown's John Russo says those rosier outlooks come from those who don't want to be the first ones crying fire.
I think everybody is fearful that any sort of discussion will result in people not spending money and the economy slipping further into a recession.
So let's call a mediocre jobs report a kind of okay one and hope for economic sunshine. I'm Steve Tripoli for Marketplace.
Clearly, then, some jobs numbers are open to interpretation. Here are some that are not. The International Monetary Fund is going to cut 400 positions, about 15% of its staff. The IMF is known for its strict lending policies, for requiring developing countries to tighten their belts. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports the IMF could use some of that same discipline.
The IMF is expected to face a $400 million deficit by 2010. The job cuts could save the fund about $100 million. Robert Dunn is an economics professor at George Washington University.
It makes sense because lending activity at the IMF is down rather sharply. The IMF is like a doctor. It deals with sick people. And not many people are sick right now in balance of payments terms.
Fewer crises mean fewer loans, and fewer loans mean less earnings. So the IMF is looking for other ways to support itself. One option would be to sell some of the fund's massive stash of gold and put that money to work in investments. Dunn says the timing is pretty good, with gold now trading for almost $800 an ounce.
If you think gold's peaked and is probably going to come down in the next few years, it would not be a bad idea to get out.
Of course, business could pick up for the IMF if there's a fresh financial crisis. Dunn says that a U.S. recession next year could put some trade partners back in line for IMF loans. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Wall Street greeted today's unemployment report with a resounding yawn. We'll have the details and we'll get the stockbroker on the line from Dallas when we do the numbers. It's been 15 years since we first heard the phrase, "It's the economy, stupid." Financial discontent helped Bill Clinton win back in 1992, and polls show the economy's moving up on the list of things voters care about in next year's elections, too. So House Democrats held a little meeting in Washington today. They gathered to hone the economic message they want to spread over the next 11 or so months. And Republicans have been fine-tuning theirs so that they can blame the other side if the economy hits a speed bump. Our Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale reports.
The Democrats at today's meeting with Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi called for more interest rate cuts from the Federal Reserve Board. They also endorsed legislation to stimulate the economy. That would include assistance for neighborhoods hard hit by mortgage foreclosures and extra earned income tax credits for low-income families. Democrats aren't the only ones thinking about a political strategy for a troubled economy. As chairman of the Republican Party during the 1980s, Frank Fahrenkopf is only too familiar with who takes a political hit when the economy goes south.
If the economy is turning down and continues to turn down as we get closer to the election day, always the party in power gets the blame.
Fahrenkopf's advice for Republicans? Remind voters that Democrats in control of Congress have been unable to pass a cohesive economic strategy. House Republicans have already gone further. Earlier this week, they issued a report accusing Democrats of scaring businesses into cutting back on investments by proposing big tax hikes. But Emory University professor Alan Abramowitz says it's the Republicans who should worry. He says a long list of financial troubles, from mortgage foreclosures to high oil prices, have already shaken up voters.
Given the negative perceptions of the economy now and the likelihood that those will continue or even perhaps get worse, it's generally going to be a very difficult political environment for Republican candidates.
Abramowitz says Republicans' only chance is to run as the party of change, and that's going to be tough to do as the incumbent party for almost 8 years. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
On the topic of elections, Hillary Clinton's going to be in southern Iowa this weekend. John Edwards will be shaking hands all over the great state of New Hampshire. Barack Obama is headed for Des Moines and parts of South Carolina. Obama's wife, Michelle, will probably be at his side, as will Oprah Winfrey. Of course, celebrity endorsements of political candidates are nothing new, but we all know that Oprah is more than just another celebrity, right? So we asked Stacey Vanek Smith to take a look at what happens when brand Oprah chooses sides.
America, you are wearing the wrong bra.
It's the call to action that sold a million Le Mystère brassieres, turned Josh Groban's Christmas CD platinum, and landed Anna Karenina on the New York Times bestseller list. But can Oprah do for Obama what she did for Tolstoy?
If I were running for president and I could pick one celebrity in America to endorse me, it would be Oprah Winfrey.
USC history professor Stephen Ross says Oprah is a master at getting people to act. He says her real power in this situation may not be getting people to vote for Obama so much as getting people to vote.
She has the potential of reaching out into a group of voters who never vote. We know from both the last two presidential elections that 1-2% of the vote in key states could potentially turn an election.
More than 8.5 million people watch Oprah, and she has a well-documented sway over their psyches and their pocketbooks. Marketing CEO Mary Lou Quinlan says Oprah is pure political gold.
People love Oprah. They don't just like her. They don't just follow her. They love her, and they believe she wouldn't lie to them. And if you can put truth into politics, well, that's one heck of a branding job.
A branding job that will be enormously helpful, says Columbia University political historian Evan Cornog. He says politics is all about honing a good image.
Issues, after all, are incredibly complicated. you know, what you try to do if you're a candidate is simplify them, come up with a nice story that sums up who you are, come up with a set of stories that express what the issues are.
And Oprah's story is all about integrity and compassion, says marketing CEO Quinlan. She says those qualities will be a lot more effective at winning over voters than things like tax policy and healthcare reform. She says that's because most of us pick politicians the same way we pick any other product.
As consumers, we don't like to admit that we make an emotional purchase. We like to say, oh, I chose that shampoo because it's got extra vitamins and makes my hair shiny. The truth is, we chose that shampoo because we saw this fabulous swinging hair and this happy woman, and we thought, hey, that should be me.
Quinlan says Obama will become part of Oprah's inspirational self-improvement message. And people do seem to be inspired. A CBS poll found nearly a third of people said they would be more likely to vote for Obama because Oprah endorsed him. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
Last night, the Senate approved a bill that could save millions of middle-class Americans from the alternative minimum tax. What we don't know yet is how the Treasury is going to make up the lost revenue. As things stand now, it won't, because the Senate didn't offer a matching tax increase, and the House isn't likely to either. Those middle-class families that are going to get hit by the AMT have seen their incomes grow some over the past couple of decades. But commentator Robert Frank says they're still having a hard time keeping up.
Social critics complain that rising income inequalities made life tougher for the middle class. These complaints have prompted others to respond that if working people can't afford Prada handbags and Gucci loafers, they just shouldn't buy them. It's good advice, but the middle-class crunch has little to do with luxury purchases they can't afford. Rather, it's that higher incomes of top earners have made it more difficult for the middle class to achieve many basic goals. Take the housing market. In subtle ways, the new mansions springing up all over the place have shifted the frame of reference that defines adequate housing for the near-wealthy. Perhaps because it's now the custom for wealthy families to hold dinner parties for 36 guests, not just 24, the near-wealthy feel they too must build bigger. And when they do so, others just beneath them follow suit. This cascade has continued all the way down the income ladder. The median new house is now over 40% larger than in 1980, and its price has risen even more. So today's average family with little more income than before can't buy today's average house without spending well beyond its means. Of course, they could just buy a smaller, cheaper one. But because house prices and neighborhood school quality go hand in hand, that would mean having to send their children to inferior schools. And rather than do that, most parents seem willing to stretch their budgets to the breaking point. Everywhere you look, higher incomes at the top have launched similar spending cascades. These days, we're expected to spend more on gifts for special occasions, more on interview suits, more even on our children's birthday parties. H.L. Mencken defined a wealthy man as one who earns $100 a year more than his wife's sister's husband. Even though middle-class families have a little more money than before in absolute terms, they're much poorer in relative terms. And so it's harder to make ends meet, no matter how much the in-laws are pulling in.
Robert Frank is a professor at Cornell University's Johnson School of Management. His most recent book is called Falling Behind. If you're falling behind or if you're just hanging on, let us know. Go to marketplace.org and click on that link that says contact. Well, 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 David Johnson, what do you have to say for yourself this week?
I have to say attitude is everything, and we've got, it is, and we've got a good attitude.
Well, you ought to, I mean, because there's no reasonable reason the stock market's where it is.
Yeah, I know. Well, we're betting on the come.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what day it was. Well, that's not true. I guess I do remember what day it was. Right when the averages had all hit like 10% corrections, mm-hmm. there was a turn. It was a sudden, palpable change. And ever since then, this market has been looking for excuses to buy stocks. There have been days, I think Lehman Brothers came out and cut ratings on a bunch of financial stocks. And you know, it would have been easy to say, oh, well, here we go again. Here come the credit problems. But no, they found excuses to buy. It's marvelous.
Yeah. Let me get your take on a couple of things here. The first is the job numbers today. We talked about it up at the top of the program a little bit. What's your thoughts?
Probably just what we needed right now. And that's really one reason you had this blah market today. You know, it wasn't too hot, it wasn't too cold. It really sets it up for the Federal Reserve Open Market Committee meeting next week. And now there's a very clear expectation that they're going to cut interest rates by at least a quarter of a point. There's dwindling hope that they'll cut them by a half. But there is an assumption they will cut them by a quarter. And what you were looking at today in these numbers is you didn't want anything too hot. You didn't want explosive growth like this ADP survey suggested we were going to have a couple of days ago. Because then the Fed was always say, oh, well, we're worried about inflation. And then on the other side, you don't want anything anemic because they'll start doing the R word again. So we hit it right down the middle.
All right, but hold on, because I refer you to the President of the United States of America, who said yesterday about the economy, as he was talking about his housing plan, he said the economy is strong. The fundamentals of this economy are strong. If that's the case, why do we need a rate cut? Is it just to help Wall Street?
He's the President of the United States. He can't come out and say, you know, we're propping this thing together with spit and bailing wire.
You can't say that?
No, it's the credit markets that really need it. And the thing is, in this case, I think he's right. You got a lot of people working. You still have a lot of growth. You've got airlines giving away money. But I think you need it because of the credit markets, because that thing fell apart, and you can't have that. You've got to have the ability to sort of roll over debt from day to day, week to week, month to month, and you've got to have some confidence level. And we're getting it back.
Slowly but surely?
Yeah, well, knock on wood, we'll get it back on Tuesday. So that's how good it is. United Airlines, which, if memory serves, was bust just a couple
of days ago, right?
They're declaring a special $2.15 dividend.
Right?
They're giving away $250 million. It's like playing Monopoly, and you get the card with the little guy who's hitting his head and says, bank error in your favor, collect.
and yet somehow my flight back from Philadelphia was delayed 8 hours. Go figure that one out.
Well, everybody likes to spend
a
little extra time.
All right. David Johnson down in Dallas, Texas. Thank you, David.
Good weekend.
Coming up, a new item for the holiday wish list.
It has everything an iPhone has and more, except the actual phone portion. So think of it as the lightest, sleekest, smallest laptop you could ever have.
We'll tell you about that, but first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials nudged up less than a tenth of 1%, 5 points, to close at 13,625. The Nasdaq inched lower by a tenth percent, 2 points, closed at 2706. The S&P 500 shaved off 0.2%, 2 points, ended the day at 1504. For the week, the Dow finished up 1.9%. The Nasdaq rose 1.7%. The S&P 500 added 1.6%. JCPenney registered almost a 7% gain today after Lehman Brothers upgraded the retailer stock. Analysts expect the introduction of a new clothing line, American Living it's going to be called, to boost sales. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 4.1%. And you are listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments. Today, Putnam manages money for more than 9 million individual and institutional investors worldwide. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Science and technology reports are supported by Boston Scientific, committed to delivering what's next in medical technology to help clinicians improve and extend lives. BostonScientific.com. Whether you're busy or lounging around, the economic gears are always turning. Marketplace is available around the clock, too, as a podcast. Get your financial fix whenever you want it. Download the show and take it with you. Just head over to our website at marketplace.org and click on podcasts.
On the Marketplace Statebook, here's a glance at what's coming up Monday. In Washington, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice speaks at the 2007 Human Rights Day Awards Ceremony. The Consumer Federation of America and Wachovia are scheduled to release a comprehensive survey on what consumers think about saving. And legendary rock band Led Zeppelin reunites in concert. They'll ramble on in London for one night. Got tickets? I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Like many companies, we just wrapped up open enrollment time here at Marketplace, that annual exercise of trying to make sense of health plans and what choices to make for the coming year. Once again, you can pick between the expensive and the more expensive. Premiums are going to go up, out-of-pocket expenses too. But some employers are trying to cushion the blow by offering benefits that are health-related and some that aren't. Mary Rose Abraham reports.
IBM doesn't count a single child among its 128,000 employees in the U.S., but kids are the focus of the company's newest health benefit. Employees can sign up their children for a three-month program that includes exercise, nutrition advice, online surveys that track progress, and instructional videos.
Your child can achieve a healthy weight, and your whole family will be better for it. Thanks for being a part of Healthy Nation. Remember, it's never too late to take control of your family's health.
When a child completes the program, IBM hands the employee $150. Workers get similar payoffs for promoting their own health, too, by losing weight, giving up smoking, and completing in-depth personal medical surveys. Dr. Jane Barlow is IBM's well-being director. She says the company has spent more than $130 million on wellness incentives since 2004.
We really view investing in our employees' health as an investment in IBM.
These wellness programs are known as soft benefits, and a growing number of companies are offering them as traditional healthcare benefits shrink. Soft benefits also include everything from help with adoptions to subsidized gym memberships, tuition assistance, and even pet insurance. This year, more than 100 companies have signed on with Cleveland-based Embrace Pet Insurance to give employees discounts on animal care. Alex Kruglick is the company's co-founder.
Employers sometimes struggle to pay things like health insurance premiums, and as they pass off more and more of this to the employee, they sometimes can fill the gap with things like pet insurance. It's a kind of a no-brainer for companies to say, hey, you know, pets are important, premiums are going up, what can we do to soften the blow?
And it doesn't cost the employer a cent. Companies like Colgate-Palmolive simply offer their employees a discount from Embrace. That appearance of goodwill could be important when employees are paying more for health care. According to the Kaiser Family Foundation, premiums are up 6.1% this year. Bianca DiGiulio is a co-author of the foundation's annual Employer Health Benefits Survey.
Over the last 6 years, premiums have increased 78%, which is four times faster than workers' earnings or inflation. This indicates that premiums are taking a bigger bite out of workers' earnings.
Employers are paying more for health care, too. So they're looking for ways to keep their employees out of the doctor's office. One of the most popular tools is the health risk assessment, a personal survey that can identify potential trouble spots. Two-thirds of companies offer them, usually with a cash payment attached. About a third of all companies offer fitness, stop smoking programs, and workplace injury prevention plans, according to the Kaiser Family Foundation.
Healthier employees are going to be less likely to call in sick and miss work.
They may also be less likely to notice that the company health plan costs more every year and offers less. I'm Mary Rose Abraham for Marketplace.
TV Guide was sold today. The cover price was $2.8 billion. That's what the digital security company Macrovision has agreed to pay for Gemstar TV Guide International. The company's hoping to turn televisions into a more interactive way for consumers to get their information. If we want to know more about tech toys, we call Kevin Pereira from G4 Television and invite him to come over because he always brings good stuff to play with. This time, just in time for your holiday shopping. Hey, Kevin.
Great to see you.
All right. Tis the season, I guess. Giving and all that, we have some stuff to look at today. What do we have?
We have a bunch of different devices here. You know, I figured digital cameras are always a popular gift around the holidays, so I brought a slightly different one. We have an internet tablet from Nokia and the latest MP3 player from Microsoft.
Internet tablet from Nokia. What the heck is that?
Yeah, so this is the Nokia. It's the N810.
Looks a lot like an iPhone.
It looks like an iPhone, but it has everything an iPhone has and more, except the actual phone portion. So think of it as the lightest, sleekest, smallest laptop you could ever have. You can go online. You can play Flash videos. You can listen to music. You can stream internet radio. You can watch movies. And there is an optional on-screen keyboard that'll pop up, so you don't have to fumble for the stylus or even slide out the screen. You can just keep it all minimized in your pocket. It's ready to go.
This is actually really cool. Now, how much does this cost?
It's going to be about $450.
which is a whole lot of money. I mean, come on.
It's pricey, but you got to compare it with a laptop and not a cell phone. And as such, a $400 laptop, it fits in your pocket, not that bad.
I'll tell you what, Steph, my wife, if you're listening, this would be it. This would be the Christmas thing. All right, so this thing has a camera, but you have an actual camera.
Yes. Digital cameras are always huge sellers around the holidays. And, you know, at this point, a lot of people like pocket shooters, right?
Right.
Simple, thin little camera. They pull it out. They snap a photo. They're a dime a dozen.
Right.
There's really no difference between any of the models. This one here is the Canon SX100IS. Not a clicking noise, but a nice servo, nice motor.
Yeah.
Let you know that you've spent some money on a camera. Right. This one will set you back about $300. But if you notice, it's not a pocket shooter. This is a little bit meatier. It's a little more sizable. It'll fit in a jacket pocket, but certainly not in your skinny Gap jeans. And it takes just gorgeous photos. 2 seconds to power on. The one downside to this camera is when you're shooting with a flash, sometimes it could take 3 to 5 seconds in between shots.
All right. Not bad. Now, back into the grab bag we go. This looks suspiciously like an iPod, but it is not. It is the competition, if you will.
It is the antipod, if you will. This is the new Zune by Microsoft. People remember the first Zune. I think 3 or 4 people remember it, those who actually bought it.
Yeah, because nobody else did.
Right? No, and rightfully so. It was panned by critics and consumers alike. Microsoft, though, they're not a stupid company. I mean, that's the understatement of the century. But when they decide to enter a market, they do so. They test the waters. They learn from their mistakes. And, you know, just like the original Xbox, Microsoft came out.
Yeah.
It was an amazing console. Xbox 360, they hit it right on the head. And we're seeing that with the Zune 2 here. So
yeah, you know what? They also learned from Apple, because this thing looks a whole lot like a Nano. I mean, come
on,
right?
Stylish. It's super small, very sleek. It does feel rugged, though. It doesn't feel like a plastic thing that's going to shatter in your hand.
I'll tell you, the interface is really nice, too. It's got that iPhone feel to it. It slides, and it's sort of got a...
Yeah, Microsoft's calling it the Zune Pad. You're zooming right now. I don't know if you notice this,
but you're
zooming left and right. It's a little touchpad on the bottom of the device that allows you to scroll horizontally, vertically, etc. But it comes in 4 and 8 gig varieties, about $149 for the 4 gig. You can share songs wirelessly with other Zune users, and now there might be more than 12 out there.
All right. Well, as I said, I think I'd buy that Nokia tablet thing out of all the three of these. So, you know, well, I guess we'll see what Santa brings.
A little something for everybody down there.
What do you want for Christmas? Seriously, if you could pick one tech device out there.
Wow. That's a tough question.
Think about it. We'll have you back in a couple of weeks.
All right, sounds good.
I expect an answer then, all right?
Will do.
Kevin Pereira, G4 Television, Attack of the Show is the name of his show. Kevin, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Marketplace is supported by Shriners Hospitals for Children, providing treatment for orthopedic, burn, and spinal cord injuries at no cost to the families. More at ShrinersForKids.org. And by Putnam Investments, where a mix of large U.S. companies can strengthen your portfolio. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note, did you pay anybody off today? We ask because somebody out there in the big wide world did. According to a new survey by Transparency International, more than 1 in 10 people say they have paid a bribe in the past 12 months. Most were paid by the poor to guarantee basic public services, like getting their water turned on. Globally, the police are most likely to push for a payoff. Over in Europe, bribes are usually paid to secure medical services. Residents of Cameroon, Cambodia, and Albania were the worst offenders. The Swiss, South Koreans, and Austrians were best behaved. Americans, we did all right. Something less than 6% of us have paid or have had to pay bribes to get by. And that is Marketplace from American Public Media on this Friday afternoon. Today, the Dow bumped up 5 points, about 0.1%. The Nasdaq shook off 2 points, 0.1% there. The S&P 500 shimmied down 2 points, 0.2%. Our theme music was composed by B.J. Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Celeste Wesson. The executive producer is a guy named J.J. Yor. Coming up on Monday, why business investment is a leap of faith in the rural Northeast.
Because I believe even the people here wouldn't believe that anybody would come here and try to make a business go. Because there is this myth in these areas of Maine that it just, there's nothing that's going to happen here.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Have yourself a great weekend.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.